Patrick, a guest on Radio Out There and who is part of a Dream Network in the United States, told me of a dream he had had when he was only 16 years old, shortly after the death of his father. In the dream, Patrick saw his father in a field, holding red flowers, looking happier than he could ever remember him being during his life. Patrick commented that his father also looked a lot younger in the dream than when he died. This is usually the case, as most people in the afterlife choose to show themselves at their best, usually the way they looked at around 30 years of age. His father gave Patrick a simple message for each member of the family and told him to read a book by a French author with a surname starting with S, which he could not remember the next day. Years later, while reading a book by Jean-Paul Sartre while he was in Paris, Patrick had a flashback to his dream and realized this was the book referred to by his father. Not only do we have dream contact with our family and friends, but our guides often use dreams to send us lessons and information we need to know. I woke one morning with the name of an old friend resounding in my mind. This was someone I had not seen, or even thought about, in many years, but I knew I had to get in touch. I rang him later that day and he was most surprised as he, too, had been thinking about me a couple of days prior. He had some information for me that was very relevant to a project that I was involved in at the time. I believe these thoughts and suggestions are often given to us by our guides, as well as our loved ones in the afterlife, as a form of telepathy, and it is up to us to follow through. If we are so preoccupied with everyday concerns that we ignore an important message, we may lose out on opportunities or suffer a negative impact. When we ignore messages or guidance, it can often be repeated in a much stronger way, almost forcing us to take notice. Patrick also told me of another dream that he had, one that demonstrated to him some of the difficulties of communication from the spirit world. He described the spirit of a man he knew who had recently passed over who was valiantly trying to communicate with his family on Earth. His lack of success made him very frustrated, as his family were not picking up his thoughts. Patrick's dream revealed this spirit was subsequently coached by his guide and told he was using too much force, and to try more subtle means to communicate. Patrick took this as a sign to help facilitate his own dream contacts a little better. Sometimes dream contact can happen many years after someone has crossed over. I had a vivid dream about David Patterson, an old friend from my commercial radio days, while I was putting the finishing touches to No Goodbyes. David, or Pato, as he was known to his friends, had passed suddenly in the early 1990s while only in his 50s. In addition to hosting radio programs, David and his wife, Helen, had purchased a property in the Hunter Valley wine-growing area in Australia and started their own vineyard. Pato was always a great wine buff, and he and I even ran our own food and wine club at one stage, hosting some of the great wine growers of the time. David was able to produce some excellent quality wines from his appropriately named vineyard, Chateau Pato. He and Helen had two sons, Nicholas and Michael, and Nicholas inherited his father's love of wine growing. Over the years I have tried to contact Pato in the afterlife on many occasions, with absolutely no success. Then suddenly he came to me in a dream, full of life, with a strong message. Please contact Helen with a message for Nicholas. I want him to know how proud I am of him. I awoke from this dream with his words ringing in my ears, and when I switched on the bedside light I saw it was just after 3 a.m. I could feel Pato's presence very strongly around me and was able to communicate with his spirit. I asked him why he had taken so long to contact me, despite my many efforts. His reply was typical of Pato: I had a lot of exploring to do first. I later realized that this was the exploration of the self as opposed to some afterlife jungle expeditions. His energy faded, and after thinking about his visit for a while I finally managed to get back to sleep. When I awoke at around 7 a.m. I could still feel David's presence, and once again his words formed in my thoughts. Come on, Von Eaton. His nickname for me, ring Helen. I want Nicholas to know how proud I am of him. Not wanting to ring Helen so early in the morning, I waited for half an hour before giving in to his impatience. I could almost hear Pato saying, "Come on, just give her a ring, don't worry about the time." It was all right for him in a timeless world. I hadn't been in contact with Helen for at least 8 or 9 years, so she was a little surprised by my early morning phone call, to say the least. However, when I told her that I had a message from David, she became very excited. She later told me that she often felt David's presence around her and hadn't stopped talking to him since he passed over. But she had not had a direct communication in all that time, except in her dreams. When I told her that David wanted to especially recognize Nicholas and say how proud he was of him, Helen went very quiet. I asked her if she knew why Pato wanted to get a message to his son. Was Nicholas doing something special? Choking back the tears, Helen told me that Nicholas had recently been given the Hunter Valley Winemaker of the Year Award for 2012, the highest honor of the region. Nicholas was coming to see her that morning and she would now be able to pass on his father's congratulations. Nicholas and David had always had a very strong bond, one that has obviously stood the test of separation. We both then realized how Pato had been keeping abreast of his family all the time he had been in the afterlife. Helen then added that in a couple of weeks' time it would be the 20th anniversary of David's passing. He obviously wanted to share so much with his family, and I felt honored that I was able to be the bearer of such good news. Sometimes we try too hard to contact our loved ones in spirit and feel disappointed when nothing happens. My guide M says that if you want to contact someone in the afterlife, relax, meditate, hold a picture of the person in your mind, ask for help from your guide, trust, and let it happen. You may get a picture in your mind, a voice, relevant thoughts, or sometimes just a knowing. It may not be easy at first, so be patient and be prepared to give it several attempts. When you are stressed and the mind is racing, it is almost impossible to connect across the divide. And always remember the importance of your dreams. Part 4. Judy, 37, a very special Valentine's Day. Several months passed before I was able to get together with Valhood, the UK medium who had connected so clearly with Judy in the afterlife. As I wrote in Chapter 10, Judy's surprise, both Val and I were speakers at a special afterlife presentation the previous year, when Judy took the opportunity to connect strongly while Val was demonstrating her medium skills. In the meantime, heeding Judy's words of encouragement, I had started writing this book, and more information soon flowed from many different directions. There were so many questions I wanted to put to Judy, who by now had been back in the afterlife for nearly 15 Earth years. I had received a few messages via dreams and meditation, but until Val connected with her so clearly in her demonstration, there had been no direct contact for several years. The connection that Val made with Judy was full of wonderful messages, but all too brief for me after such a long time. However, it whetted my appetite for a longer connection, so eventually I was able to arrange a private session with Val. At this stage Val was staying with friends in a city about 1,800 kilometers from where I live, so it meant a plane trip, and also finding the best place to hold a meeting. The effort involved only increased my expectations, and by the time I caught up with Val, my sense of anticipation was high. We decided the best place to have our session was at the hotel where Anne and I were staying, so I set up my recording gear, as I didn't want to risk losing a word from Judy after all this time. Contact with the afterlife can often play havoc with technical gear as I have found in the past, doing live talkback radio, so I set up two different recording devices for our session. Having traveled so far for this special occasion, I was not about to take any chances. Just to prove a point, one recorder worked perfectly, but the audio software on my laptop computer played up at first, and then the recording became so distorted that it eventually had to be scrapped. Similar technical mishaps often happen with microphones when mediums are doing stage presentations, clearly showing the different levels of vibration between our two worlds. On Earth, our energy vibrates at a very dense level, much slower than vibrations in the world of spirit. When spirits come into our dimension, they have to lower their vibration rate significantly to communicate. Some spirits come through with a very high energy level, which can affect electronic equipment. Sometimes initial contact can take a little while to stabilize. However, Judy was the straight away, and her spirit energy had actually been accompanying Val for a couple of hours beforehand. Judy was obviously very keen to make contact. Val told me later that she had been nervous about making the connection with Judy, knowing how important it was for me, until she heard a voice saying, "Will you stop worrying? It's going to be fine." Not surprising for me, as Judy had always been one to take charge. Our meeting was held most appropriately on Street Valentine's Day, and Judy came through very emotionally at first, saying that it meant a lot to her to be able to connect on this special day. She warned me that despite our relationship on Earth, I had to realize her essence in the world of spirit is not the person that I knew when we were together. Judy was apparently very excitedly showing Val picture after picture in her mind, and they were coming so quickly that Val threw up her hands and asked her to slow down. Val then closed her eyes and told me that she saw five people standing around me in the room. She recognized them as guides who were there to help her receive the messages from Judy. She was later told that they were also some of Judy's soul support group. Suddenly there were several seconds of complete silence as Judy dramatically demonstrated what had happened immediately after she passed over. There was a long period of silence because of the way I passed, she told us. Judy had died after a short illness at the age of only 51 from a rare heart-lung condition, in which she suffered terrible breathing difficulties. Judy told us that she needed a period of complete peace when she first crossed over because she felt shattered into tiny fragments and required healing to be put back together, to raise her spiritual level to a higher vibration. Judy's whole life had been an emotional roller coaster, and she needed this recovery period to help her settle into the afterlife again. She revealed that this had been her last lifetime on Earth and that in such cases, they throw everything at you, and it is your biggest test. She told us that members of her soul support group have that in common, as they have all endured a very tough lifetime on Earth, and are now ready to work to get this story of the afterlife out to as many people as possible. Judy spoke about the moment she first left her body, describing her experience as a sense of floating, in which she was being met and taken, but she didn't realize at the time where she was being moved. At this stage of the soul's entry back into the afterlife, they are taken to a healing center to recover from any illnesses or health conditions that have been imprinted on the spirit body after it detaches from the physical. The next vision she showed Val was a long white room that appeared almost as if it had been made of ice. There were windows in the room, but they were like dark spaces, and Val could not see through them. Judy soon discovered that each dark space contained one of the key lessons she was supposed to have learned in her last life. Judy was referring to the life review process that every returning spirit faces. Every soul experiences this review in its own unique way. Each portal took Judy into a different period of her previous life, starting when she was only 3 years old. She then looked at her life at various stages, having been shown the events of each particular time and how she had dealt with key situations that had arisen. Judy was able to tell us that when she emerged from this review, she found out she had passed with flying colors, even though she admitted that in some of her lessons she had not done too well. However, by the time she had reached the end of her life, even though she was still young by today's standards, she had accomplished everything that she was meant to achieve. Judy knew at her time of passing that she had done her best and was happy with the way she had conducted her life. She realized after crossing over that she was ready to move on, and didn't need her physical body anymore. It was an important confirmation for me that when the soul decides it has no further need of the body to which it is attached, the spirit lets go and moves back into the afterlife. As the soul attaches itself to our body at the heart, this detachment is an emotional release. Judy then confirmed that she and I, as soulmates, had met again in the last few years of her life, as was our destiny, so that she could complete her final incarnation. At this point Val felt Judy touching her on the arm, which she interpreted as Judy's way of telling her that I had become her right arm in the last months of her life. Val had no way of knowing that I nursed Judy through her final weeks at home, with help from other members of her family. Judy wanted me to know that she appreciated my support in helping her cope with those last, painful days of her life. Judy acknowledged that while those last few weeks on Earth had seemed to me to go on forever, for her everything sped up and it was over in a flash. She needed the peace of those last days and hours to reconcile her life. After initially being sent home in a highly emotional state from the hospital when the doctors bluntly told her they could do nothing further for her, Judy's condition deteriorated rapidly. She went into respite care 2 months later for what I thought was to be only a few days, but she passed away quietly in the early hours of the morning, only a few hours after being admitted. Right to the end, I had believed that there would be some miracle and she would recover. It took me many months to accept that this was her time to go. While recalling the details of her passing and her arrival in the afterlife, Judy indirectly confirmed something that I had always wondered about. Peter Ramster, the psychologist, good friend, and past life expert, who was treating Judy in her last weeks, had dreamed about her final moment on Earth the night before she passed. Peter had become close to Judy and believed that she was healing. In the dream he saw two beings come through the window beside her hospital bed and gently help her spirit leave her body before all three turned into white doves and flew away. Both Peter and I felt the doves were angelic symbols. It was a beautiful image and a very prophetic dream. Peter did not even know that Judy was in the hospital, let alone the fact that her bed was the only one situated next to the window in the large ward. Suddenly Val asked me if I had a thing for angels, and I confirmed this, as I often tune into the angelic realm for help and guidance. Judy then confirmed that angels are real, which my guide Emulator said was her way of verifying Peter's dream. 38. Information from the Akashic Records. As Val's contact with Judy became stronger with each passing minute, so too did the scope of the information being received. When our session first started, Judy asked me to write down any questions I wanted her to answer, in what turned out to be a very long and detailed communication. However, after speaking about her passing, Judy needed no further prompting, as she had arrived with a program of information that she wanted to cover. She spoke about spirits accessing information about past incarnations stored in the Hall of Knowledge, often referred to as the Akashic Records. I had previously experienced this hall as a classically designed building, which I visited in my previous between life journey as Brian. Judy described it as huge, vast, bigger than I could imagine. She then revealed that the Hall of Knowledge is not tucked away in some corner of the spirit world, it is actually inside each one of us. It is around us all the time, even when we are in our physical body. This was the first time I had heard this concept and it opened up a whole new direction in my imagination. It had been easy to create an image of some kind of building in the afterlife, storing massive amounts of information, like some gargantuan warehouse. This was a whole different ball game. Judy's explanation of our inner space showed me how our limited thinking makes it so difficult for us to understand the power of spirit. We have conditioned our minds to see a solid structure to know that something like a hall of records could actually exist. But when I thought about it later, the idea made a lot of sense, because we create so much in the afterlife using the power of thought. If we have a storehouse of information contained within us, it also explains how we are able to access our storehouse of wisdom and also recall our past lives. We can also train ourselves to access the Akashic Records without relying on a specially trained medium, starting off by learning how to raise our energy vibrations to a higher level. My guide M confirmed that our guides can help us to do this when they decide that we are ready. But once we are back in spirit, our visit to the Hall of Records becomes a different and more intense experience. Judy showed Val images of people floating up and down in a vast space, while others were clad in dark cloaks hiding their faces. Val also noted that these spirits had no feet. Judy was demonstrating how people move around in the afterlife, using nothing more than the power of thought. Judy also spoke about spirits being around us all the time as we go about our lives on Earth, but we can't see them because they are on a higher vibratory level. She also said that the world of spirit is located just above our own, and my guide Emulator described it colorfully as sort of like icing on a cake. Judy told us she has advanced to the stage where she is now able to be in hundreds of places at the same time. Part of her activities in the afterlife include working with spirit children in the healing center after they first cross over. She also works with new souls who have to choose some of the lessons they wish to learn, and because of her experience and the level she has attained in the spirit world, she is able to help them with their planning. She explained that new souls are being created all the time, which answers the question many people ask about the burgeoning world population and the number of souls needed to supply the demand. The creation of new souls is a fascinating procedure, one that Judy was able to explain in graphic detail. She showed Val an image of a light being shattered into many fragments, with a solid part remaining intact at the core. This very dense core of energy embodies old souls, and those fragments exploding to the outside represent newer souls. We are all part of the same original spirit, and the spirit fragments spread outward with the newest souls on the outer fringes. Judy explained further, when this shattering takes place, part of our soul heals and stays in spirit and another part moves on, so we go into different areas. The new souls are the less dense parts of that spirit energy. This means there is a part of every soul in each new one created, as we are all growing, all evolving, at all times. At this stage, as my head was spinning with thoughts and images of all these fragments, M came to my rescue, saying that this explains the oneness of all life. The original energy that fragmented, creating the first souls, is what most people refer to as God, also the Creator, the Divine, the Source, Spirit. Each fragment then becomes its own spirit entity, before eventually fragmenting again, and so on. M also explained that new souls come from only the more advanced spirits. I found it comforting to know that spirits in the dark side are not given this capability. It also explains, for me, why so many gifted children are being born in recent years. Their deep soul wisdom and advanced intelligence are sorely needed in the future to help us in these turbulent times. Judy provided Val with the well-known image of an onion to further illustrate her point. The core of the onion is surrounded by many layers, which can peel off and have an application of their own. The core stays the same, growing new layers as they are needed. The core represents our true self, while the various layers develop their own paths. Each layer finds its own direction, which will include another incarnation and ultimately the creation of a new soul. These layers will eventually return to the core soul to do it all again. Judy's soul essence, her core with whom we were communicating, was attached to her body, a layer in her last life. Otherwise, she said, I would not be able to recognize her. But it doesn't matter how much we fragment, our core essence is still always there in the world of spirit. This fragmentation happens to every soul when it reaches a certain stage of development, but the number of times we are able to splinter depends on the density of the core spirit itself. As each soul learns and grows from its many incarnations, it is able to embrace the core spirit more closely each time it returns, until it has no further need to reincarnate. This core spirit is referred to by several names: the Oversoul, the Soul Energy, and also the Higher Self. It is always with us during our physical life, but the majority of people do not realize this. We can learn how to tap into the wisdom and guidance of the core spirit through meditation and the power of intention. Each soul group has to explore and undergo every possible earthly experience through its various members, and new souls are created for this purpose. As each soul ends its earthly life cycle, the last incarnation is usually the most complex of them all. Many challenges and difficult life conditions are usually part of this final experience for these old souls. On the other hand, new souls may float through life with no apparent problems, where everything is seemingly handed to them on a plate, partly because they have no accumulated karma. However, as they create karmic lessons on their first trip to Earth, each subsequent incarnation will become more complicated. So, I guess, the message for these new souls is, enjoy the easy life while you can. M added that the core spirit becomes denser as souls become more advanced through their many incarnations. Judy's description of fragmentation also means that the life I am consciously living right now is probably only one of several other aspects that my soul energy is simultaneously experiencing, not only on Earth but also in other dimensions of reality. This explanation made it clearer to me how we are able to reincarnate with the same souls over many lifetimes, as our soul groups are actually part of the same core energy. Judy also confirmed that she and I are aspects of the same soul, as are various other members of my earthly family. She refused to identify them, saying that if she told me it would spoil it for everyone. Recognition has to be at a soul level, not just in the head. The only person she would confirm as part of this core group is my partner, Anne, because, as Judy put it, you knew that anyway. For me, this explanation finally defines a concept of soulmates to which I can relate. 39. The Heavenly World of Judy. When I spoke with Judy, I was delighted to hear about her life in spirit, particularly as we had parted under such emotional circumstances. While we did brief conversations and some dream contact, this was the first opportunity I had to really communicate with her for many years. A few months after she crossed over, she contacted me through the medium Ruth Phillips, after which I was told we had been given permission by the powers that be to stay in contact. My abilities as a medium started to develop, and when I look back on it now, I realize Spirit was setting the wheels in motion for me to write books on the afterlife. As I prepared to speak with Judy through Valhood, I already knew that our activities in the afterlife are many and varied, with opportunities for advancement to higher planes available for everyone. We are required to expand our self-knowledge, and also work with other souls in their development, both in the world of spirit and also on Earth wherever appropriate. Judy told me that she loves working with the spirits of children who have passed over and are going through the healing center before returning to their soul groups. She is also an important member of the soul group with John Dingwall as its spokespirit as they channel themselves through trance medium Kelly Dale, offering us their collective wisdom and experience. I was disappointed that she had not come through directly in one of our group sessions, but M informs me that this will happen in the future. I do remember one occasion, several years before John started to communicate, when Kelly and I were working on developing his trance mediumship. Kelly had communicated with his guide, and then suddenly his whole demeanor changed and Judy unexpectedly came through. I must admit it was a bit strange to watch Kelly's face melt a little and hear a soft, almost feminine voice, full of emotion, spill from his lips. Judy had a few very personal messages for me, and I, too, was filled with emotion at her unanticipated presence. Perhaps the whole experience was a little strange for Judy as well, because she has never come through this way again. Judy was always very house proud in her last life, and a week or so before she passed, I discovered her on her hands and knees cleaning the bathroom, despite her intense breathing difficulties, because people were coming to visit. I was horrified. But obviously my puny efforts at domestic maintenance were rubbish in her estimation. It came as no great surprise when I visited her in the dream state, a year or so after she passed over, that the first thing she wanted to show me was her house. Using the power of thought, she had created a classic rose-covered cottage with a lovely garden, set in a verdant valley, surrounded by rolling hills. I remember mischievously going outside this very neat little cottage, where I created snow with my thoughts, making a snowball. I then brought it inside and threw it at her, snow splattering all over the place. She pretended to be very annoyed at me and we both had a good laugh. At that point I sat bolt upright in bed, vividly recalling my dream as tears poured down my cheeks. That dream has stayed in my mind, and many years later it is still as clear as the night I experienced it. So it was a lovely confirmation when Valhud told me that Judy loved working in her garden and was surrounded by flowers of every variety, with colors that Val could see but not describe, as they were unlike any we knew on Earth. Judy was born under the astrological sign of Scorpio in her last life and typically enjoyed mysteries, secrets, and delving into the past.